Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Gridiron Blitz on Blog Talk Radio and right here on UltimateSportsTalk.com. A lot of things happening in all aspects of football and specifically college football this week, including NFL injuries and big protests over in Missouri. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Thanks for joining us today alongside co-hosts Nkechi Free and Troy Wilson. I'm your host, Oscar Lopez. We'll be talking college football and women's gridiron news within the hour, and on top of that, NFL later in the hour. So, but we have some sad news to report before we kick off the show. Unfortunately, this past weekend in Mexico, Martha Benitez, one of the standouts for the Vaqueras of the football extreme over in Mexico, FXF, passed away this past weekend of unknown circumstances. She was very, very good athlete. A very talented athlete, played in the Mexico national team, and also, like I said, in Vaqueros and FX. So our condolences go out to the league and her family and friends on, obviously, this sad incident. Martha was one of the promo athletes that was being showcased by FXF and also showcased by Jolo, the photographer. And you can find her technically on our Facebook page as well as on our Instagram. And you can go to FXF, and they have obviously some information there as well on the burial information and everything else that goes along with it. So to the family in FX and to the Benitez family, our condolences go out to her and her family. So a reminder of our broadcast, sponsored by Zazzle.com. You can go to Zazzle and get cool stuff for Christmas from top brands and our own No Joke Football brand. You can save big with codes daily. So make sure you use the codes. You can save up to 50% on certain items every single day. So it's not every week we start off with sad news, unfortunately. And then we also start off with, you know, obviously some incidents in college football. But we're going to be covering the AP 25 today. And Troy will get us onto the topics of the hot buttons that are going on. So, Troy, welcome to the show. And Nkechi, how is the time? Obviously this weekend was pretty intense for me because the rain started in the West Coast for some reason. We had a drought and all of a sudden we got this, you know, water pour, so it was kind of a little bit awkward for everybody to get adjusted back to wet weather. So,
well, I had a good weekend. It was very, very long. I hosted and sponsored a 5K this weekend on support of a nonprofit that supports people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So, of course, that was a really long day. And then after that, I had to pull massive mommy duty and stand outside for hours helping my little man sell popcorn for the Boy Scouts. So, needless to say, I all the really good football games. But I've been watching everything and paying attention to the scores and catching up that way. It seems like there were a lot of really good close games this weekend that I missed out on. So definitely ready to hear what you guys have to say and get your feedback about what happened. Troy?
Well, this weekend I spent a lot of time watching football. Yeah. You know, enjoying the college landscape and then once again, you know, enjoying the NFL game. So, you know, watching how, you know, the Alabama-LSU game played out. It was just, you know, it was fantastic, you know, at least from the beginning. And I'm pretty sure that Alabama fans are pretty happy with the result, you know, with them winning the game. So, yeah, I enjoyed the weekend very well.
Yeah, and it was kind of exciting, too, because you were getting into that stage in college football where playoff rankings start to kind of, you know, take into effect. So you kind of have to have your eye on it. And that's the reason 9 times out of 10, you know, trying to keep up with it, it's so overwhelming at times, especially right now. But I think it's, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, pretty much, and then Notre Dame up at the top. And you have, I think, Iowa and Baylor also. But the only thing that I don't get college is it literally means the record means literally nothing. You could be 9-0 and still not make a playoff positioning, or you could be left out. And that's the one thing that just, you know, bugs the hell out of me. It's just like, you know, it's not evil, not level competition. There is a state where, you know, the top university schools obviously overshadow some of the up and coming, or some schools that obviously may be deserving because of their play. But, you know, that's never going to change unless they do a playoff system or some sort of even scheduling. And that, I don't think that's going to happen because it's so much big money involved with it. So politically, that's the bad thing about it. It's very exciting week to week because you're on edge. So I will attest to that. So Nkeishi, Troy, we're going to go into this, you know, situation where we don't want to dive into because it's obviously society and everything else included. But real hot button, Troy, you can brief us on it, but and give us the insights. At Missouri, we had an incident here where there was a lot of some things going on within the university, not necessarily the football program, but within the university from what I read and what I gathered from USA Today and other sources. And the president there, I guess, was asked to resign because of non-action. So if I'm not correct, obviously correct me. And at the same time, you know, the football team, which is primarily African-American, which the school isn't overall from what stats that I gave, took a big stand because it's a big program. And so, Troy, tell us a little bit about, you know, what happened at Missouri this past week.
Well, to expound on it, you know, just to give you some quick stats here, Missouri itself, the University of Missouri, is 79% white and 8% African-American in regards to the undergraduates. And even when it comes to the faculty, it's 70% white and 3% African-American. So, you know, the numbers, you know, obviously there is a, you know, there is a dominant, you know, it's a domination there numbers-wise with whites. But what happened was and this has been going on for decades, apparently, and this is coming from former students at the University of Missouri, as well as current students, and you know, in regards to the racial slurs that are, you know, that are not only racial slurs but also anti-transgender, anti-homosexual comments from some of the white students that are there. And when these things were presented to the former president of the university, Tim Wolf, the students there felt like that Mr. Wolf didn't act accordingly. He didn't act swift enough. He didn't you know, respond as if he were taking these things serious. So, and I guess one of the incidents that happened that sparked this was when the student government president, Mr. Peyton Head. He's a gentleman, he's a student at the school, and he was walking home from class, and someone, you know, some white students that pulled up in a pickup started to scream racial and anti-homosexual slurs at him. And he had said, this is not the first time it's happened. He said, it's happened a lot. And I guess at that point it became a boiling point. And then he presented this, he let Mr. Wolf know. And, again, you know, you had the inaction there. So just to see the fallout from it, which was, you know, this has happened since September and no one's ever hearing about it. The I guess the good thing and the bad thing about this is is that the Missouri football team got involved, and all of a sudden this became part of the national landscape. So about 30 members on the team decided that they were going to join Mr. Peyton Head, as well as a gentleman, Jonathan Butler, who had launched a hunger strike until Mr. Wolf stepped down from his position as the president of the university. So, you know, with all of that being brought into it, the 30 football players, the 30 African-American football players decided that they were not going to play the game. So now it becomes a monetary issue. If you have 30 of, you know, your African-American players who decided not to play the game, that's, you know, that's kind of open some eyes. You know, that's not something that happens every day. And at that point, their teammates, even the white teammates, decided that they were going to join them in this protest. And the head coach, Gary Pinkman, and give him all the credit, is that he backed his players. He decided, listen, if this is a topic that transcends football. And so he let his kids have this voice, and he stood behind them. And when you have that, when you can leverage yourself, and obviously it had something to do with a little bit of money, because, you know, if you're not playing a game, it's going to have some money, have to do with, somebody's going to lose some money. At that point, they leveraged their football playing careers and having this protest go to a head at that point.
And, yeah,
you know,
Mr. Wolf this week
resigned. So, I mean, you know, they got some movement on it, and that's what they wanted to hear. But as they said before, as some of the reports have said, is that this is just the tip of the iceberg. So I'm looking forward to finding out the other things that are going to come about from this.
And do you think, Troy, I'll put it in sort of a more focal point. Do you think if the football team hadn't acted on it, it would still be an ongoing issue?
Yes, it would be. If the football team didn't get involved, I don't think this is a national story. I think this is something that goes on, unfortunately, on a lot of campuses. But these things don't affect anyone's pockets. It doesn't affect, you know, unfortunately, I have to take a football game and do that, but there's money involved in these football games, obviously. But if the football team didn't speak up, I don't believe this is part of a national landscape at all.
And now I was reading, I think it was on Sporting News, that I read that this game was a $1 million loss. The game had not been played, including sponsorship and revenue of everything in the school. This university would have lost $1 million, and not including fines from probably the NCAA at some point. So to your point, we're talking dollars here that really – it pushed somebody to say, hey, you're resigning. We're dealing with this now. We're taking care of it. And then it's just sad that the young men on this team, which I think you have to applaud them in one way. It's sad in another because the university obviously didn't take, like you said, things seriously. But you have to applaud these players, for taking a stand and doing the right thing. And also jeopardizing some of their things that happen at the school, because now you got scholarships and other things that could go into a bad situation sometimes where people backlash at other players and stuff like that. But bonding together as a team and then having the coach, to your point, backing everything up, I that you have to applaud them for that.
Absolutely. I couldn't be prouder of the guys. I mean, just everyone involved in it that stood up. I just, but to your point, I just think it's unfortunate that, and I guess it's a good thing on another hand, because some people, who aren't typically involved with sports question the importance of sports. Well, here's a situation where you can sit back and say, if not for sports, would we get any movement on this? And as I said before, this isn't the end of it. This is just the tip of the iceberg from what the kids are saying there, and also you have the faculty that's involved now as well. This is just the tip of the iceberg, and there are going to be, it's going to be more movement along with this situation. So I'll definitely keep my eye on it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say a good thing, but it happened at the biggest university in the state. which it didn't happen at a low level Division One or Division Three. I mean Division Two or Division Three. You know what I mean? Because sometimes those incidents go on a sidebar because the program isn't as big, so it becomes a side note in terms of coverage. But since it happened at a major, you know, at a major college program, and obviously being the biggest program in the state, huge factor right there, huge. So, I mean, to your point, it happens almost in every college, Stan, but it's kind of rare that it happened there in some senses, but not so much because it is common. And for somebody not to take action, that's almost like a and Keisha, you can relate to this, and I can relate to this, and Troy, you probably relate to this. I mean, it's similar to sexual harassment at work where, you know, your boss or yourself or whoever is in charge in a management status, anything of a claim in that nature has to be taken seriously, you know what I mean? Investigated and addressed. And I think here it's just like, you know, the big higher-ups or one person didn't feel like those things were obviously compounding and those things were, you know, not a big deal, which technically it is a big deal because in the bigger scope of things, you got a reputation of the university, number one. And number two, you also have, you know, situations where you can get, you know, sued based on non-action. And a lot of times that's what happens.
Yeah. You know, in instances where, you know, I've had jobs in the past, and I think that's the biggest point, is that if you attempt to mitigate the situation, then, you know, at least on the surface, it looks as if you care. It looks as if you are trying to find a result. You're trying to resolve the situation. But the inaction is what really, I think, did Mr. Wolf in. And I'll give you a situation. It's like mold is a big hot-button topic when you have apartment buildings and dwellings where they're being managed. So if you see the mold in there, if you sit back and you say, hey, well, you know, we'll deal with it later, and you don't address the situation, mold can become a multi-million-dollar lawsuit. But if you try to at least wash the mold down or remove the mold from it and the mold comes back, at least you have a leg to stand on and say, hey, you tried to do something. You know, I think that the inaction, though, is what really did it.
Yeah, I think that's the big point right there. It's just the fact that no action was taken. And you would think from a person at that level, you would think that person would understand the ramifications. You know what I mean? They're obviously, it's on a hot seat. You're overseeing the university. This is your realm. I mean, that's the way I would have taken it. I would have taken it to, you know, getting resources, you know, getting the authorities involved, getting the security at the faculty, you know, at the university involved. You know what I mean? Something of a some sort of action, just to, you know, more tight security, whatever, you know what I mean, or just be aware of other things that are happening, but not to take any action. That's just wrong. Number one, and number two is just it goes to show your character, you know, your individual character, that you're not really.
It also,
you know,
it also reinforces the behavior of the people that are doing it. So the people that are, you know. You know, yelling racial epithets and racial slurs at people, and they see that nothing is happening to them. What does that make them do? They feel empowered to continue doing it. So they're also strengthening that, which probably adds to the amount of times that it's happened.
Yeah. Hey, Keisha, you got anything on it?
Yes, I do. And I wanted to make sure that I sat back and let you all discuss it, because my position is a little bit different in terms of how I feel about the situation, because I'm an alumni of a historically Black college and university. However, I'm also an alumni of a predominantly white institution. So I have the benefit of both experiences to bring to the table regarding what happened at and the situations that occurred at the University of Missouri, you know, from having attended a predominantly Black college and a predominantly white college. And Chris Carter, and I was trying to find his actual words, so I'm not going to do them justice, but I think it was Friday on Mike and Mike, Chris Carter, the fact that most of white America does not understand what it is like to be an African American on a predominantly white college campus because they see the athletes. Athletes are not treated like other students. Athletes, I'm going to repeat this again, are not treated like other students. And when the majority of the athletes are of one racial group and or ethnicity, it is not appropriate to assimilate their experiences onto everyone else. When, like Troy said, you have a college campus where there is 7% African-Americans, and they don't have the benefit and luxury of being an athlete because, truthfully, those students don't have value to the university because, as Troy said, they don't bring in the dollars. They don't bring in the money. And I specifically remember an incident when in college, not attending Mississippi Valley State University, and I was not I'm a proud alumni of the University of Akron, so this incident did not occur on either one of those campuses. I was with a friend, and he was a black guy DJing at a white fraternity party. So he invited us to come to the party. And they said, "You're not welcome." And the only black people who got into that party were the basketball team, were the members of the basketball team. And so my friend, upon realizing what was happening, because it was myself, another African-American female, and the DJ who was black, said, "If my friends can't come in, I'm not DJing." And once we got into the party, there were no other African Americans there. It was the DJ, the two of us, my girlfriend and I, and the basketball team. There is a difference in the treatment of African American students on predominantly white campuses. Attending Mississippi Valley State University, which is located in the town, and this is not a lie, it's called Itabena, Mississippi. I always joke and say it's Itty Bitty, Mississippi, because the town has one lake. However, Itty Bitty, Mississippi and Mississippi Valley State University produced one of the greatest wide receivers that the NFL has ever known, and a guy called Jerry Rice. We're at Itty Bitty, Mississippi, and I'm attending Valley, and I go to the local Walmart, and inside the Walmart, is in the sports section, is everything from Ole Miss, which is 2 hours away, Mississippi State, which is 2 hours away east, USM, which is where Brett Favre attended, which is 4 hours south. Yet there was nothing in the Walmart at that time that said Mississippi Valley State University, which is 20 minutes away. So, yes. For me, this issue hits home. This issue hits home in a way that I cannot even begin to speak in terms of my experiences and my treatment and in terms of what happens with African-American athletes. Everyone is making a big for me, I am proud of the athletes. I am proud of them for recognizing that their preferential treatment is not reflected in the experiences of their co-patriots. And I respect the coach and the rest of the university individuals who stood up, because there is a problem when the only value that the African Americans have at these institutions is for their athletic prowess. Now, of course, I'm not putting a blanket on, brush on all predominantly white universities. I had an amazing experience at the University of Akron. I could not have asked for better professors who were engaging and thoughtful and forced us to be critical thinkers. And now, again, I attended as a graduate student, so I can't speak to the experience of undergrad African-American. But I just want, so this is not a critical statement of all predominantly white institutions, but there is a huge disconnect in the value and in the worth of the schools and the students and the athletes and the experiences that must be addressed. especially when you've got these schools making millions of dollars off of the athletes who 40 years ago couldn't step on these schools. And if you wanted to get a quality athlete, you had to go to the Mississippi Valley State Universities. You had to go to Jackson State University to get Sweetness, one of the greatest running backs of all time. You had to go to Grambling State University. Rest in peace, Coach Rob, one of the winningest coaches in the history of college football. So, yeah, this issue for me really hits home. And then, and honestly, it's probably one of the reasons why I don't do college football, in all honesty, because of these huge disparities, is that my preference is to follow the SWAC and the MEAC and the CIAA schools. So that's my take on the situation. So kudos to the students for their leadership, and kudos to the coach for recognizing and respecting the feelings of these young people, because truthfully it was no different than the LA Clippers who were willing to not play as long as Donald Sterling remained at the head of that franchise on the situation.
Troy, you got anything to add?
Very well said. Very well said. It's you know, and I'm starting to see a trend with the students at the University of Missouri. Because not only did we have their student athletes stand up for, you know, against racism, but just a few seasons ago, they also stood arm in arm with their brother Michael Sam, came out as a gay football fan. He didn't necessarily during the season, but they did accept him in as their brother. So, you know, with Gary Pinkel there and with his leadership, I'm definitely proud of how Missouri football, and I'm not singling out Missouri football because that's really what's been mentioned in the story. I'm not sure about any other organizations other than Student 50. And they gave the student, they gave that organization that name because that was the first year that African Americans were actually allowed to attend the University of Missouri was 1950. But to give the Missouri football team a lot of credit, I mean, they have been groundbreaking the past few seasons. So I think that should bode well for all the other student athletes who want to stand up for, you know, for the same reasons. If you're having, when it comes to discrimination, I think that should give a lot of other college athletes the thought process to say, hey, we can stand up for these things. We can use our popularity. We can use our ability to make money for this university and leverage it for the good of the people.
Now, I have not been involved with it, and obviously being Mexican, have never felt anything that you guys have felt, and then anybody else of African American. And I have friends, you know, that obviously that I've seen things go through and stuff like that. Like when I was in South Carolina for my military servicing, totally different aspect in certain parts of the country. The university stature, the players, you know, you have to do something. I mean, you have sponsorships. It would be nice if they didn't get paid. I think it would be nice if they at least got some, you know, endorsement money, you know, apparel money or whatever to pay for their tuition or something, or their dormant stay or something of that nature. But then some people would say that would be kind of entitling them and isolating them from the rest of the universities. So, Nkishi, what do you think of that?
I agree that it would be entitling them and distancing them from the rest of this university, because we also have to remember, and I think I can say this effectively, it's not just a race issue, it's just that that's the one that people are focusing on, because we also have to bring into this conversation the fact that someone put a swastika on the wall and they made it out of feces. How tacky is that? How disgusting is that? First of all, to even touch feces, and secondly, whether it was with their hands, a brush, I don't care. That's just filthy. And then secondly, to draw a sign and a symbol that is clearly designed to install fear, disrespect, and represents the most, one of the most insidious chapters in the history of the world, in addition to the slave trade in America. Those are just two of the most heinous things that happen. I can't even begin to speak about just how disgusting and horrific that is. So it's not just the African-American students who were disrespected and degraded. And so for the football team to stand up for everyone was amazing. But I agree with you that the point is to create healing amongst the students and not create any further separation, because they are one student. They are one body. And I think that with the college football, we get so lost in the boosters and the sponsors and making sure that, you know, we have the best booths and seats, that oftentimes when do students get a chance to go to the game? Because all the best seats are given away in efforts to bring in corporations and sponsorships, and the boosters use them to get businesses for themselves. You know, if it's a booster with a big company, they'll buy a whole bunch of a block of tickets to the game for their potential business corporate individuals that they want to solicit and entertain. And we forget that college football is for the students. And so I don't think we should do anything that's going to create further division, but figure out how we can be more inclusive and allow them to be able to be one student body population together.
Yeah, and that's going to be hard, because a lot of debates are on that. I mean, you see a lot of players saying, okay, well, the university makes X amount of dollars, but then you have to the percent of maybe basketball or football being a high-level profile, but the rest of the programs in some universities are really non-factors. So that also is, you know, the big issue. Troy, what do you think?
Well, when you start to add money to the pot, you start to go on to the haves and the have-nots. There are some blue blood programs in the NCAA. If you can name them off the top of your head: Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, Florida, Florida State, Miami, LSU. These universities have millions and millions and millions of dollars that are flowing through their athletic programs, and they're funneled through the programs predominantly through the football team. So on one hand, you can sit back and you say, okay, well, what made this university prominent? What put this university on the map? And you can't argue that it was football. Alabama may be a great school. I honestly have no idea. But I do know that going to Alabama, you're going to be on TV. They have a lot of people that, you know, they've gotten their players into the NFL, and that's their bell cow. That's what makes people go to the universities. It's a known fact. When it comes to sports moves the needle as far as enrollment. I give you an example in basketball. You had George Mason. Most people in the country have never heard of George Mason. George Mason is a small school, it's a small commuter school in the state of Virginia, in Fairfax, Virginia. Well, when George Mason made it to the Final Four, their enrollment went up 76%. 76%. You could say the same thing for VCU. VCU made it to the Final Four. All of a sudden, their enrollment went up. And if you go down to the city of Richmond right now, you'll see cranes all throughout the sky. And they're building there because their basketball team started winning. When their basketball team started winning, students, kids who are coming up in high school, they want to be part of a winning environment. So when they want to enroll in the school where they're going to actually enjoy going to the athletic event, and they're going to pay for it, and then you're going to have other people who want to be a part of it, and they're going to pay for their tickets. So it moves the needle, and the university benefits from it. Now, see all of these buildings going up as an athlete, and you're going into, the student store, and the first thing you see, if you're a star athlete, you see your number there. The sad part is you see your number being sold, and you don't even have enough money in your pocket to buy the jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a heck of a quandary, you know. You're on TV, you're being interviewed by ESPN, you could be a Heisman candidate, but you can't afford to buy yourself a pizza. You can't afford to buy to buy yourself a good pair of jeans if you don't have, your parents don't have the means to do it. So where do you draw that line? It's not an easy question to answer, but at least the discussion is there on the table, and it's going to take a while to get that out. And let me just be clear about this: whatever happens with this, whether they get paid or not, whether every athlete in the program of the university, meaning the swimming team, even if they have a badminton team, whatever, if they all get paid the same, there's going to be a faction of people that are not going to be happy with it. So you're never going to make everyone happy with this. I believe that the athletes there who have earned the money for the school, I think they do afford, they should be paid a certain amount of money.
I think the best way to put it in non-separation status would be that if they're contributing to the prestigious, or if they're putting themselves out there, they're playing their sport, but if they're contributing to revenue for the school, I think it should in some point, even if it's not given out in the salary format, I think it should be given out in some sort of educational scholarship. Something where they get their tuition gets covered in some format. And then maybe they get something in return for their contribution. You know what I'm saying? It's just, but there is a fine line there because, like Nkechi said, then you are really somewhat separating, the regular Joe student, who obviously is, probably as big, if not bigger, to contributions to society in terms of other programs, not sporting programs, but in terms of the university scape with research and everything else. So how do you equate, somebody that does that versus somebody that's, playing sports every day? So, yeah, I guess it's not very easy to answer.
No, it's not. I wanted to follow up on what Troy was saying about the fact that, you have people who are out there hustling and maybe it's someone on a team that's not getting as much recognition in terms of bringing in the financial dollars. But here's the other part of it. If we were to be honest and look at the revenue that the schools receive just from TV revenue alone, where is that money going? Is it really going back into the program? Is it going to pay the salary for the coaches? Or how much of that is actually funneled into other academic programs? Because if the fact that the schools may not be receiving those funds from the state, or especially your smaller schools. Look at how every year, this is my opinion only, I hate to see CUs play the bigger institutions. I can't stand to watch Jackson State or Mississippi Valley or Alcorn State go up and play Mississippi State. The students get demolished. It demolishes their spirit. It makes them look horrific in front of scouts and makes them look like incompetent boobs. It literally is like the varsity squad playing the freshman squad. It's awful. And it's not fair in terms of assessing the talent that's available. However, the HBCUs, just because of those 2 hours of degradation, in my opinion, on national television, will bring in almost $200,000 that they never would have had access to. Now, where's that $200,000 going to go? Is it going to go back into recruitment to try to secure better players? No, because who wants to come to your school now? But it will go to help pay for academic scholarships for some of the other students. It will go to pay for something. So how many athletes are really, because of the revenue that they bring in to the schools, are paying for someone else's scholarship?
True.
Well, to expound on that, when you have these the bigger schools that play the HBCU schools, and I do agree from a pride standpoint, it doesn't feel good. I went to Delaware State University, and which, by the way, Keisha, I'm not sure if you know this, but we produce Jerry Rice's running mate, John Taylor. So I just wanted to throw that bit out.
You know I know. That's just like Alcorn State University also produced Steve McNair.
Of course.
Yes, so, you know, but, I have. So Troy and I do this all the time because he's MEAC and I'm SWAC. So we go back and forth with this all the time. So we're just having fun being silly. And it's always going to be a MEAC SWAC battle.
I want to make sure that you understand that I'm the ref, so I will keep you in bed.
But to expound on it, there is a benefit to being a highly paid punching bag, or a sparring partner, if you will. When I went to Delaware State University in 1994, our weight room was in shambles. It was my high school weight room. My high school weight room was much bigger, which was an embarrassment to me, you know. But we made do with what we had. Fast forward until now, when I went to their homecoming in the middle of October this year, they have a whole brand new facility. The facility is top notch. I mean, you go in there, they have Olympic weights, they have a swimming pool there, they have aquatherapy lounge. It's incredible. It's decked out. But they got that from being a punching bag, so to speak. So when they got beat 66 to nothing by Michigan the other year, and they got a $375,000 payout. You know, I think pride kind of took a back seat at that point because, you know, unfortunately, those HBCUs don't get a lot of revenue like that. So whenever they get a chance to, they try to take advantage of it. And it looks like most of the HBCUs have actually done that. Now, when they start recruiting better athletes, or the better athletes want to start getting there, how do you do that? It's kind of hard to to have a young student who is a great high school athlete. And you say, okay, I can play on TV. I can play on every day with Notre Dame. I can be on TV, or I can go to an HBCU where I can hope that NFL scouts, if that's your dream, will notice me. And it's going to be a hard hurdle to hop over at that point.
It is absolutely true, and that's part of the problem is that in terms of college sports is you cannot make that sell. And despite the fact that there are a significant number of professional athletes out, in fact, I just read a stat this summer that said Southern University, which is part of the SWAC, for those listeners who aren't aware, the SWAC stands for the Southwestern Athletic Conference. The MEAC stands for the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. I'm just teasing. But I read a stat But the stat said that Southern University in Baton Rouge was one of the schools that had the highest number of players in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So it's not like it's impossible. You know, you've got Antoine Bethea, who's playing out there. I think he's out there in San Francisco, who was here from Howard University. You got Jason Hatcher, who was one of the top defensive players on the Washington Redskins team when he's not hurt, came from Grambling. So it's not that it's an impossibility. It's just that it's not promoted via the media. And it's honestly one of the reasons why I actually went into sports media, because I wanted to have a platform to create this awareness. So that's why I said I knew I was going to have to be careful and sit back and watch and listen for the show to not take over, because this is literally one of the areas about which I am most passionate when it comes to in sports media, is the creating for the school.
We're gonna have to monitor this going forward, as Troy would say. Is this a trend? Is this something that's going to be, you know, repeated based on, you know, obviously stature of a certain university? So, Troy, let's obviously, you know, big topic here, and we spent a lot of time on it. I hope everybody that's listening understands that it's a crucial topic. It's a situation where we have to applaud Missouri, the athletes in Missouri, ultimately, and
absolutely,
the coaching staff, for doing doing the right thing. And then obviously, hopefully this is not going to go forward anywhere else, but, you know, to our discussion today, things do happen in certain circumstances and in certain realms and certain colleges based on, you know, size and normality. So let's hope that that's not the case, especially when you have, you know, Hitler-like symbols going up in dorm rooms and stuff like that. That's just not right. So hopefully people will realize that that's not what America's about, and that's not something we want to go back to and relive. And I don't want to relive it, and I know other people do not. So ultimately, let's talk college top 25 then. Let's move forward with the positive. I see, Troy, the college football poll and the AP poll, which to me it's kind of like a bananas and apples, but technically Clemson is number one on both polls. What's your thoughts?
They've earned their spot. Clemson has been probably the most solid team in college football this year. You know, they've had dynamic play on both sides of the ball, but mainly from their quarterback, Deshaun Watson. I mean, this guy, he was injured last year, and he came in as a highly recruited quarterback. And the way he's playing right now, he's starting to elbow his way toward Heisman talk. You know, Dabo Swinney, who, man, I love that guy's name. I just love it. Dabo Swinney. You're probably never going to hear anybody else called Dabo, but I love the guy's name. If you've ever seen this guy on the sideline, he's so exciting. He galvanizes his players just by his excitement, and to watch this guy with the enthusiasm that he has, and you see why their team plays the way that they do. So, I mean, Clemson has definitely earned their spot. Now, with Alabama at number two, wow, what a game that they played against LSU this weekend. You know, we thought it was going to be one of those wars, and the game started out actually that way. But as the game went on, Alabama started to wear LSU down. And to watch that game, it was just, wow. I mean, you go from, you have your running backs, who both of them come in as Heisman candidates in Derrick Henry, and also Leonard Fournette. And you're thinking, you know, both of these running backs are going to get a high amount of yards. And unfortunately for Leonard Fournette, he didn't get a whole lot of yards because Alabama's defensive front is about as stout as you can get. I mean, these guys could, in my opinion, stop a bunch of NFL running games. So with Leonard Fournette, he's leading the Heisman candidate, and this guy was averaging about 175 yards per game. I remember at one point, I think he had 11 carries for 9 yards. And I think he ended the game with maybe 25 yards. It was just it was un-Fournette-like. But Derrick Henry stole the show. He came out and he ran for over 200 yards on a tough LSU defense. So Alabama, you know, they jumped up two spots, so now they're at the number two position. Ohio State, they're chomping away. They're still 9-0. Now, a lot of people are going to come back and say, you know, their schedule isn't as strong, which kind of attributes to them kind of staying stagnant, dropping a little bit. You know, for the most of the season, they've been the number one team in the nation. But as you see, they've dropped at least two spots recently in the past 2 weeks, with Clemson and Alabama moving up with the bigger games that they have. Now, Ohio State has some bigger games. They have some huge games coming up. Number one is they have Michigan State coming up. Now, Michigan State is a tough team. Now, they have to play Illinois this week, but then after that you have Michigan State, who just took a tough loss. And, you know, so, but Michigan State is going to be, they're going to be pretty motivated. They have the Big Ten title that's going to be at stake with this. And then after that, of course, you have Ohio State and you have Michigan, the big game. Now, that is always a war. A lot of times the rankings and their records have nothing to do with it. Both of these teams just flat out hate each other. So for everyone that's saying Ohio State has played a weak schedule, in the next 2 out of 3 weeks, Ohio State's mettle is going to be tested, and the country is going to start to know a little bit more about them, whether they're a great team or just an average team. Now, Notre Dame, who is going to round out the top four as far as the playoffs, another team that's kind of overcome a lot of adversity. In the beginning of the year, you know, they lost their starting quarterback. But then you have Deshaun Kizer who's come in, and he's basically taken over the reins. Now, it started off a little bit bumpy, and they lost to Clemson, who's the number one team, and that's the only blemish on their record. And to your, when it comes to losses in college football, there is a such thing as good losses, and there are such thing as bad losses. So if you have lost, and your only loss during the season was to the number one ranked team, that's considered a good loss. And Notre Dame has moved up for that reason alone. So they're definitely going to be a team to look for. C.J. Procise is their top running back. He was taken out of the game for a concussion this week. He was just cleared about 7 hours ago. So he's going to go coming up this week. And, to watch these four teams start to play out, it's going to be a heck of a battle. And then now at number five, you have Iowa. Kind of around the same thing as Ohio State. They're 9-0 right now. No one's beating them, but the strength of schedule is a little bit lacking. They didn't have to play Michigan State. They don't have to play Ohio State or Michigan. So they've kind of had to coast a little bit as you've gone along. But the fact of the matter is that they haven't lost. And the great thing about the Big Ten is that the Big Ten has the Big Ten championship game. So even though Iowa hasn't played any of these top-ranked teams, if Iowa wins their division, they go on to the Big Ten title game, and they'll have to either play, which looks to be so far, either Ohio State, Michigan State, or Michigan. And either way, that's going to be a tough test for the for the Hawkeyes. And then you have Baylor at number six. Now, Baylor probably feels like that they've been disrespected the last 2 years. At the end of the year last year, at the final week of the playoffs, Baylor was ranked number two in the playoff system. And then they were pushed out by Alabama and Ohio State. Now, Baylor felt pretty disrespected. You know, they had a great season last year. They were 12-1. And they were pushed out of it. And I think the main reason, and this is something that has to be fixed in the Big 12, is that the Big 12, unlike the Big 10, they don't have a title game. So they put a lot, the voters put a lot of emphasis on these on these conference title games. And since the Big 12 does not have a title game, that kind of dampens their season. So Baylor is maybe the odd team looking out, as well as Oklahoma State, and they're both undefeated. But these guys are going to match up soon. So when you have Baylor and Oklahoma State, they're going to collide coming down the road. You also have Stanford and Notre Dame that are going to play at the end of the season. You have Michigan and Ohio State that's going to play at the end of the season. And then you have Alabama, who has to play their bitter rival at the end of the season against Auburn, who is an improving team in itself. These standings right here actually don't mean anything, because in the next 3 weeks they're going to be completely obliterated, and you're going to see a lot of teams moving and shaking up and down the rankings.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying if you follow the scope of things, you can pretty much know that week to week things are going to get tossed up, and then the biggest thing is the wins and losses really don't factor in as much like they do in the NFL, because, you know, in the NFL you got division rankings and stuff like that. Here, it's more on quality of play and perception based on, you know, who's evaluating the teams and stuff like that, and the quality in terms of points. And, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into play with it. But I just, at this point, it looks like, I think Clemson's at, if I correctly, it's at 321 points. And then Alabama's at 306, so 8-1. So you are looking, like you said, that they should. I mean, Alabama should deserve to be number one or number two after they beat LSU 30-16. But it's going to be exciting to see going down next week and the week after, like you said, because in 2 weeks you got Michigan as well, and that's usually a big game as well. So it's going to be very exciting. So Troy, let's take us into the next segment, because we're into college football. So what do you think this weekend? I mean, what's your maybe top three that you think are going to be coming out in terms of, you know, making surprises this weekend or pushing forward at this point into the rankings?
Well, I'm looking at Michigan at number 14. And the reason why I say Michigan is because they are in a unique situation with Michigan State losing to Nebraska this following week. With Michigan they have two losses. One was to Utah, who is ranked number 10 in the country, and then they also lost to Michigan State, which is in their conference in the Big Ten. Well, if Michigan wins out and Ohio State beats Michigan State, then it will be Michigan representing the Big Ten, their division in the Big Ten championship, who will probably end up playing Iowa. Now, if Michigan wins that game against Iowa, it's conceivable that the Big Ten champion will go on to the playoffs. Now, this is similar to what Ohio State did last year, where they made a huge leap from, all the way, they moved up 9 spots to kind of sneak it to the playoffs and knock Baylor and TCU out of there. And Michigan actually might be on that same track, even though they have 2 losses, because the 2 losses that they have, and when it comes to the voters, it's not just a computer thing, but they also have the human element with Michigan losing that heartbreaking loss to Michigan State. And with that part of it, people know that that Jim Harbaugh has Michigan on a track hit. Now, if they win out and then also win the Big Ten championship, I think you'll end up seeing Michigan in the playoffs.
Okay, Troy, I have a question. Last year, we saw Oregon go all the way, to the playoffs. What happened with Oregon this year? Like, I'm going up and down, because I do keep up with college sports. And I'm looking at the AP poll. I'm looking at the coaches poll. And I've also been paying attention and looking at the playoff selection committee poll. And, of course, like you said, everybody's got Clemson at the top. There's some variations within who's in the top 4, between the 3 polls. But I don't see Oregon anywhere on here. So what happened to Oregon that they fell off so badly this year?
Well, number one, Oregon lost the best football player in the country last year, Marcus Mariota. So what ended up happening is that Oregon, they didn't recruit a quarterback who was up to par with the Mariota. They brought in Vernon Adams, who was a transfer from Eastern Washington. Now, this is his first year on the campus. As you guys, I'm pretty sure, have heard before, it's pretty difficult to learn a new offense. So with the Ducks, they're transitioning a new quarterback away from Mariota, they're transitioning to a quarterback who wasn't in the program before, it was a tough go for them. So they've had a bit of a tough season this year, to the surprise of many, as they started off the season and ranked in the top 5. But to see them fall off the way that they did was pretty surprising for most, considering that they recruited very well.
Right, and that's what threw me off. I thought that the whole point was an understanding that they were losing Mariota, that they were going to go on ahead and start recruiting to get those pieces in place so that they could remain up there. I mean, because the reality is Oregon has been one of those what I call the fringe teams, like the Boise State. There's those fringe teams that have always been good but have not been on the national stage like an Ohio State, like the Florida Gators, like an Alabama, but never negating the talent. So I thought that having finally, broken that glass ceiling and pushed in with the big boys and the big leagues, that they would not have allowed themselves to fall so abysmally off the map again. So did I miss something?
Well, unfortunately, when it comes to college kids, it's just in any kind of recruiting, it's the same thing in the pros. You bring in highly ranked, highly touted players, and they may not mesh the way you thought they were going to do. And it's no different when it comes to Oregon. They recruited well, one, because they've had this up-tempo offense. The other one, let's just face it, kids love the outfits that Oregon has. When the Ducks come out there, and they have literally 300,000 different combinations, and they all look awesome. Come on, who wouldn't want to play in those things? But unfortunately, when it comes to these kids, sometimes you spend a lot of money on recruiting, and these recruits just don't work out. When it comes to most programs playing well, then the rest of the team falters. The one thing everyone has always talked about was Oregon's offense.
And then you have the lack of spotlight because they get overshadowed, Oregon will get overshadowed basically by the bigger schools, which is the UCLAs, the Stanfords, and the Washingtons up north and the Northwest.
USC, correct.
Exactly. So in the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 at this point, they sort of go down in the standings. But it's always changing. That's why I'm saying it's kind of – isn't it like a headache? It's kind of like a headache in college. For me, it's a headache. because I don't follow it that closely. But it is a lot to gather. So, Troy, awesome job, and got us into the know. And then next week we will dive into it. Within 2 weeks, obviously, we got the Michigan, like you said, the big game as well. And then we'll talk about some of the big matchups next week. So, at this point, the top five is Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Baylor, Notre Dame, from what I can tell. So we'll keep an eye on those teams in the top five. And Troy will go into detail next week in terms of who shifts and who's obviously made some strides as well. So let's take us into the next segment, which is basically we go into the No Joke Football Huddle, sponsored by Zazzle.com. So you can go to our shop until November 11th, save 20% off. You can use code ZVETDAYSALE at checkout, and you can customize anything there as well. So, Troy, did you get the rundown for women's gridiron in Australia?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's go with Australia. Let's start in Queensland. We can start there and give us the rundown there.
Okay, Gridiron Queensland feature clash between the GC Stingrays versus the Logan City Jets. Our No Joke supporters, quarterback Lauren Evans Rays, beat the Christy Moran Jets 38-22 in a tough battle with lots of scoring. Rays will now face Ravens on November the 14th. Now, with the Ravens coming off a 30-3 victory over the Spartans, the number one Rays will face the number four Kenmore Panthers in the playoffs. And the other matchup will feature the number four Jets versus the number three Ravens. The story here is that the Ravens in their inaugural season, led by Lucy Jarez, Sinead Hotton, and Sammy Harris, beat the Jets and eventually the Rays in the final. Will they? Who knows? Follow at JC Stingrays and at Gridiron QLD and Women's Gridiron for the latest results.
And you have Troy, the Ravens, this is their first season, and I know you've only been with us for a short time, but this is their first season, and they have basically made a statement in this league. I think they're 6-2. Now they're going up against the Jets. The Jets, they played the Jets before, and they beat the Jets. So this is kind of a rematch, so it's really, really good to see. And Keisha, let's take us to Ladies Gridiron.
Okay, the Ladies Gridiron League Game 2 will be at the NIB Stadium in Perth, and it will feature the veteran West Coast Angels with quarterback Leah Warner versus QB Lisa Fife and the Adelaide Phoenix. The Phoenix undefeated with the inaugural win 48-8 in Week 1 versus Brisbane behind Chelsea Nicole Farr's 4 touchdowns. Check out the teaser on our Facebook page from Project 628. And you can also get tickets for the match at www.ticketmaster.com.au. So for everyone who's already down under, again, if you want to attend the game, then go to ticketmaster.com.au. And you can follow LGL, which is www.ladiesgridiron.com. Again, you can follow LGL or the ladiesgridiron.com to get more information on the Ladies Gridiron League down there in Perth.
All right, so Gridiron New South Wales this weekend, the Northwest Phoenix will take on Stacey Spears, which is one of our No Joke Football supporters in Australia, and the Red Hot Raiders will look for a 6-0, continue to their season, which is undefeated, while the Phoenix look to get their first win of the season. They're 0-5 right now, so they're looking for an upset, which I don't know if that's going to happen with the Raiders playing so well. UTC Gators will face Newcastle Cobras. The Gators are 3-2, looking to stay in the playoff contention with the Raiders, and they will take on the Cobras. Cobras look to improve to 3-3 if they can get by the Gators. The Raiders look sharp, outscoring their opponents 148-50. So this is a beast of a team, and they have their sights set on the Opal Bowl, which is basically their Super Bowl. So their Opal Bowl is going to be in about a month, about 2 or 3 weeks. So they're gearing up for that. You can follow Gridiron New South Wales at Gridiron NSW on Twitter. You can visit gridironnsw.com for the match results and schedule. So, Troy, take us to Italy now.
Yes, the CIFAF in Italy announced that they are selecting a national to prepare for the 2016 friendly versus the WFA Atlanta Phoenix. Go to the Facebook page for the IFL Magazine article.
And Czechoslovakia?
Yes, and in Czech football, congrats to the Prague Black Cats on their 2015 Czechs up win versus the BRNO Amazons, 24-14 this past weekend. Check out the ladies on our Instagram.
All right, so and Kishi, can you tell us about Sammy Grisafi?
Absolutely. You know, I absolutely love talking about Sammy. Congrats to Sammy Grisafi, former Team USA and Chicago Force icon, on winning the Action Icon Award. And you can also check it out on our Facebook page, so it's pretty, pretty cool. And I'm excited to say that the Pittsburgh Passion was honored at Heinz Field for their championship during the Steelers and Raiders game. So congrats to Lisa Horton and Franco Harris for all their accomplishments. And I want to give a big kudos to the Pittsburgh Steelers because, again, the ladies of the Pittsburgh Passion have just done an amazing job of elevating and bringing awareness to quality ladies football. And I big props to the Steelers for recognizing and supporting their fellow home team football team.
Yeah, and you have to add to that that the Passion is on a 22-game winning streak over two seasons. So that's
yep.
just awesome. On top of
and
all
in
that.
Heinz, and if I remember correctly, didn't Heinz Field host one of the first championships for women's football to be played in a major NFL season?
Yeah, and Sammy Grisafi was part of that. Chicago Forest against San Diego Surge at Heinz Field for the WFA championship in 2012. So that was a huge stepping stone for the sport in general. So, and it all had to do with obviously Franco Harris and his his crew and his organization of the Pittsburgh Passion as well. So hats off to him for always being supportive and involved in women's football in the Pittsburgh area. So we get off the off-season scoop in the WFA and the IWFL, and if you want to know what's going on with the Women's Football Alliance and the Independent Women's Football League going towards 2016, you can catch all that from our partner, Neil Rosendahl. Neil Rosendahl writes everything, pretty much WFA and IWFL, and all the changes and what's going on with tryouts going towards 2016. A little bit of tidbits here on the Legends Football League as well and some other leagues that are coming up and coming. So you can go to our Facebook page and get and read up the article, or you can visit www.neilrosendahl.com, neilrosendahl.com. And you have the link there to his article as well. I want to give a shout-out to the Manitoba Girls Football Association on their awesome halftime game. They showcased at St. Thomas University in St. Paul, Minnesota this weekend. And thank you to the St. Paul University for inviting them. Check out the video on our page, and you can also visit the Manitoba Girls Football Association on Facebook. It's obviously a great program. Young girls playing American football is one of the original programs for youth girls that play full kit American football. So congratulations to the Manitoba Girls Football Association on their trip to St. Paul. We got a shout out to Sam Gordon, who will be in the playoffs in her league this weekend for the Mustangs. And we look forward to obviously having her bring a championship trophy home. You can visit Sam at YouTube under Sam Gordon on YouTube. And you can also follow Sam on Twitter at Sam_Gordon6. And you can follow her pretty much on all the videos. And she does college football, too, as well. So, and for the latest happenings in the women's scene, follow us at Gridiron Beauty and our Facebook page, Gridiron Beauties. Don't forget to go like us on Instagram, too. We have amazing girls playing American football worldwide, and they play no-joke football. So let's dive into Week 9, Troy. And as a reminder, as we dive into the NFL, you can go to ultimatesportstalk.com. You get the latest scores of all major sports, including WWE and MMA. So take a look at it at ultimatesportstalk.com. So, Troy, this weekend, kind of exciting game for me was Pittsburgh and the Raiders. And then the other clash towards the end there, my Rams lost in overtime. I just didn't think they were going to – I knew they had a good chance to beat you know, end up beating Minnesota, but it just didn't happen. And then you also had San Francisco surprising, winning by one against Atlanta with a backup quarterback. So let's start with you, Troy. What did you think of Week 9?
Well, I did want to bring up that there was a quarterback that plays for San Francisco that someone said wasn't going to do much, and it looks like he actually won the game for his team. You know, I just wanted to bring that up really quick. You know,
that wasn't me, was it? That wasn't me.
No, someone else that might be on the show right now. I'm just.
I did not say he wasn't going to do much. I just said that I don't think that he is as talented. That is not the same thing. And if there are too many crazy upsets all weekend long. But go ahead, continue.
Well, I was actually pleasantly surprised at the Carolina Panthers, number one. Cam Newton, I mean, what more can you say about the guy? I mean, his main weapon was taken away with Benjamin being injured in the preseason. And this guy has done nothing but, you know, put his team on his shoulders and just elevate his team to great heights. And I don't think he gets enough doing. Well, one of the things that I think most people who are kind of stats and analyst people, when they look at Cam Newton and they say, you know, the guy's only completing about 54% of his passes. The touchdown to interception ratio isn't great. But what he does is he passes the eye test. When he's on the field, you can see the leadership that comes off of this guy, and his team follows behind him. Now, does he have an incredible defense that's backing him? Absolutely. Most teams in the NFL will probably succeed with the Carolina Panthers defense that's been playing lights out from day one. And they're 8-0 right now, but you have to give these guys a lot of credit.
Yeah, you got to give him credit. You got to give him credit. And he's playing lights. I mean, if you can beat Aaron Rodgers in about a touchdown mode, you beat Green Bay, you're for real. I think they are for real now. You can pretty much say right now they are for real. They probably weren't for real 2 weeks ago, but now for sure they are obviously a top dog. Let's look at, to me, it was, you know, San Francisco rebounding was a big story because we had so much question marks with Kaepernick at the helm. But I think the G-men is probably the bigger story in the last couple of weeks. I think the Giants just rebounding, you know, to a couple wins, I think would be the surprise, I think, for the last 2 weeks.
Not a surprise to me because that's really their story. I mean, both the years that they won the Super Bowls over the Patriots, they did not have stellar starts. For whatever reason, Eli's like an old crank engine from the 1930s. You just got to wind him up. Once he gets going, he's like a little toy. He kind of doesn't stop. But the problem is, for those first couple of weeks, you don't know which Eli you're going to get. And I think that's been the critical part of the issue. And I wonder if JPP coming back with his claw hand and all may have done something to also elevate the morale of the defense because he was such a defensive leader on that team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, also with the New York Giants, I mean, they've been struggling all year on defense, and they've had little to no pass rush whatsoever. Am I surprised that they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? No. Let's face it, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not a very good football team, but they are an up-and-coming team. And one thing you can see is that they do rally behind Jameis Winston. I mean, the way this guy gave up his body diving for that touchdown – it's something that you want to see with Tampa Bay. Now, they're not going to compete for much right now, but what you want to see them do is compete on a daily basis. And they look pretty good out there as far as a competition standpoint, and I think that's all you can ask for from the Tampa Bay's management. Now, with Eli Manning, anytime that guy's on the field, I mean, he scares me to death. I mean, if you can ask any Patriot fan this, I mean, the Patriots fans probably still have nightmares about this guy, so as long as Eli Manning is upright, the New York Giants have a chance, and that's despite having the poorest defense right now. And they have plenty of injuries on that defense, but
yeah, they're starting to pick up steam. That's what I'm saying. They're starting to notice it,
mm-hmm.
And then you start into that division, and the Cowboys somehow lay an egg and lose 33-27 to Philly, and DeMarco Murray. All smiles afterwards, of course. So I don't know what happened there. I mean, I know you were asleep. I know you were asleep in Kishi because I tweeted, and I don't think I got a response over 5 hours. So I'm assuming that you were knocked out over the result. But that was my assumption on Twitter. But now we know that wasn't the case. But anyway,
yes, I was
Kelly
knocked out. However, it was because of something else.
But it's not like they didn't. It's not like they didn't put up a fight, and that was good. I mean, it was good to see Castle really asserting himself now as a leader without Romo. You know, talking about Romo overshadowing. You know, every 20 seconds, when is Romo going to come back? And I think he's kind of eliminated that now. He's playing pretty decent ball. He's not making many mistakes. So you know, to lose in overtime like that, it was just a couple plays that they could have taken back, and it was every either team's win. But unfortunately, Philly comes out on top, and that division is just bad. I don't know why, but it's bad. And so,
yeah, but that's the way the Cowboys have been playing for the past 4 weeks. Every single win has always been, every single loss has always been one or two for the game changers. I mean, if you still look at it, despite the fact that the Cowboys have lost six in a row, they still have not lost by more than a one score. Isn't it more than one score loss, whether it was a touchdown or whether it was a field goal? So the reality is that the Cowboys have been in contention. They just haven't been able to figure out how to get all of the pieces together. But I have to say for me that the game that really, I think the game that really for me stood out amongst everything was, of course, Denver losing to Indy. And Peyton being 3 yards away, 3 yards away from breaking the passing yard record, and he loses on a pick. How crazy is that? So not only do the Broncos lose, but then, of course, now we know that the Colts have lost Andrew Luck with a lacerated kidney, I think it was, was a torn abdominal muscle.
Yeah,
and,
lacerated kidney.
Something, yeah, I was right, a lacerated kidney. So that for me was the game, because we all know the Colts have truly been abysmal and on the hot seat, and they finally gelled together the way everyone expected them to play all season, and now they lose Luck for the next, 3 weeks, they're saying, minimum?
2 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, he's going to be out for some time. And, you know, unfortunately for Andrew Luck, I mean, he's been getting beat up and beat up. I'm surprised it actually took this long. I mean, if you've watched that Indianapolis Colts team play
awful
over the years, he's been getting beat up, you know, for in his whole career. He's usually on the tops of the league when it comes to quarterbacks being sacked, and he's definitely up there with quarterbacks just being hit in general. So I'm actually surprised that it took this long for him to start breaking down and having all these injuries. I mean, after a while, you're going to have to put him out there in a body cast. But, you know, one thing that really is starting to unnerve me a little bit is watching the Denver Broncos operate on offense. Every now and then you'll see Peyton Manning look like the old Peyton Manning. You know, he'll hit a receiver going down the seam, and the receiver will run, you know, for a touchdown. He's got Demaryius Thomas out there, who's still a beast. But when the story started coming out in the offseason about Peyton not being able to feel the tips of his fingers, and it's due to nerve damage from his neck surgeries, I think it's starting to show. You know, he has an extremely solid defense along the lines of what Cam Newton has. But this weekend, I think they took a little bit of time off. But, I mean, well, they took a step back a little bit, but DeMarcus Ware did get hurt. But you're going to start to see, going further into the season and the weather starting to get cold, how is Peyton Manning going to manage that, with his hand not being as strong as it used to be? It's going to be something to keep a close eye on.
Yeah, he definitely has concerns there with the health issues and stuff like that. I know you're listening, Erica, so let's just give you the Evil Empire shout-out. The Roger Goodell, Hate Roger Goodell tour is still on point to Super Bowl 50. So hats off to you and your Patriots. And give a shout-out to Eric this weekend, because the Bears squeezed one by the San Diego Chargers last night, which was a good thing.
Man, that was an exciting game.
Yeah, Jay Cutler coming through. Not everybody's a Jay Cutler fan, including in my household, but overall, he came through and he got the win for him.
Yeah,
now, that's the team who's disappointed me is the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers, to me, are like my Cowboys, except that they have more of their players. I really thought that this was going to be the breakthrough season for San Diego. They were right on the cusp last year, and I thought this was going to be that year that it was going to push them through. And I'm really just flabbergasted that they keep finding ways to lose when this team is so much better than what their record is. I know you are what your record says, but sometimes you're not what your record says. It just so happens that way. And then, you know, injuries, all of it, I just expected better. And then, of course, we also know Big Ben out again. That's going to be a huge blow to the Steeler Nation and those old stinky, terrible towel people. You know, that's got to just be crazy. So can their new young quarterback carry them through for the rest of the season? Because I don't think they're going to turn back to Vic. Troy, what are your thoughts?
No, I think Landry Jones is going to keep it going. He's actually played pretty well in the two games that he's played in. He started one of these, and now he's going to start until Ben gets back. You know, he wasn't a bad player coming out of Oklahoma. You know, he was a finalist for the Heisman, I think, 1 year, and then he kind of took a step back his final year in Oklahoma. And, you know, his draft status kind of dropped a little bit. Coming into the NFL, I was actually surprised that the Steelers went with Vic because Landry Jones has been in that system. I think he's been in there like 3 years now. So when he came in, it wasn't really much that was new to him. He's familiar with the system. He's familiar with the playbook. He also had a pretty decent running game, and that's even after they lost Le'Veon Bell, because Williams coming in there, I mean, this guy didn't miss a beat. So he does have a decent running game. He's got great, great wide receiver in Antonio Brown. I mean, the guy accounted for 300 yards. Now, it was against the Oakland secondary, who has basically two guys who you can't even read their names anymore at this point because their jerseys are so black. You can't even see their names on the back of it right now. But Antonio Brown is still one of, if not the best receiver in the game. So this guy has plenty of weapons to play with.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get out of here, and we'll talk Week 10 next week. We'll start some college football going forward. So at this point, it's been a fun week so far. So if you're playing fantasy, it's getting exciting for Week 10. And if you're not,
you should be.
Well,
not
some
me.
Of you are having issues, but you'll get better. I know you will. For the rest of us that are having
fun
at a social league, I know. Troy, thank you for the college football insight. Go ahead.
One more note about fantasy football. It was just deemed that in the state of New York that FanDuel is illegal.
Yes. Yep,
yeah.
I just saw
so
that.
That's going to put a big damper on fantasy football. DraftKings and FanDuel.
Oh, yeah,
FanDuel.
For sure. Yeah, that was in the news the last couple of weeks because of the Las Vegas and everything else in the gambling industry for some reason. So you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow at TroyWilson_1 and Kishi's Cuties to talk anything NFL Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night for sure. If some of us are awake, some of us are not awake, but we'll get back to you, no problem. For the rest of us that are awake, it's at Gridiron Beauty and at TroyWilson_1. You can also follow our network partners, G.I. Quindam, at giquindam.com. You can go to G.I. Quindam, check out all the amazing stories of talented young ladies playing American football. And you can follow at Backseat Coach for the latest updates on the WFA IWFL. And you can follow at Gridiron, Women's Gridiron, and Joslar46 for the latest news on Australia and FX Mexico. And don't forget, weekly we update on Gridiron Beauties on Facebook and daily on Twitter. So, Troy, thank you very much. We will see you guys next week. And Kishi, I hope you rest up, and we'll see you next Tuesday as well. So, for everybody, Oscar Lopez, we will see you guys next week for Week 10 of the NFL and more college football talk Have a great night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.